Thanks, Judy, and good morning, everybody. I am wearing the hat today of co-chair of the Social Behavior Change Working Group, so I will be focusing specifically on that working group in this presentation, and I do not have any competing interests. So as Judy said in her first presentation, there are a total of 8 working groups within CORE: community child health, safe motherhood and reproductive health, nutrition, HIV, malaria, TB. And they're really described as the heart and soul of CORE Group. They're a chance for members to come together and develop tools and strategies that we really feel that there's a felt need for. Usually tools come about because somebody says, you know what we really need, or you know what's really missing, and people sort of agree to work together and develop one of those tools. It's very oftentimes member-directed, and so members come up with the ideas, and often members are the ones that are actually developing and producing the tools as well. So of course today we'll be, with this presentation anyway, we'll be focusing specifically on the Social Behavior Change Working Group. So our working group vision is to contribute to improved maternal and child health outcomes by strengthening the capacity of CORE Group members to design and implement effective social and behavior change interventions while also documenting and disseminating valuable experiences. Over the years, we've supported the field testing as well as the dissemination of over 25 SBC tools and resources, and we've done a lot of work with capacity building through webinars, through case studies. We got into doing book reviews even for a while of reading social behavior change themed books and sort of educating each other on those. So it's a very fun and collaborative group. I always think that SBC brings out the creativity in people, so it's a fun group to be with. One of the tools that's really a hallmark tool that the group has developed and disseminated over the years is called the Designing for Behavior Change process, or DBC. The DBC approach is a tool that is all around supporting the design of effective and context-specific behavior change interventions. It's a process that leads implementers through a systematic series of steps to define exactly what the behavior is that is going to be changed, identify the key influencers around the behavior, and identifies the key enabling factors, or maybe even the key barriers that are either promoting or inhibiting the behavior from being implemented. And it supports the development of the effective strategies to then address these barriers. And I'm going to go into a little bit of detail about this one tool, because it's really probably the tool that we've done the most work on, and then I'll give you a snapshot of some of the other tools that we've developed. So this is sort of what a DBC framework might look like starting out. We would have the behavior that we're trying to implement, which for today's purposes we can say hand washing with soap. That's always, I think, one of the hardest behaviors to promote, even here in the U.S. And we would know who we wanted to promote that behavior with. In many cases with global child survival work, it would be moms with children under 5 years old. And in a typical approach, without having done any sort of formative research or anything like that, we might just assume, well, the reason that moms don't wash their hands is because they don't know why it's important. So the activity that we might implement around behavior change is, okay, well, we're just going to educate mothers around why they need to wash their hands through radio messages. And that would be sort of something you would do generically. But we always know that there is a big no-do gap with behavior change, and the reason that people don't implement their behaviors specific behaviors is often not because they don't know whether or not to do it or why it's good to do it or not. So the DBC process, as I was mentioning before, is a really a key method to figure out sort of what the contextual determinants are that are influencing the uptake of that behavior from the perspective of the target group. So I might have my own idea about why women might not wash their hands, but of course I'm not a Ethiopian mother living out in a village somewhere, and I can't project that onto people. So it's a process of figuring out from their perspective what the reasons are. And based on that, we are then able to develop what we call bridges to activities, or contextual activities that would then influence the behavior. And of course, the only way to figure out what these determinants are is to do formative research. So a key part of the formative research is looking at a series of determinants, and these are the list of determinants which we study. perceived positive consequences, negative consequences, self-efficacy, and social norms are really the most common determinants. But we also look at determinants such as perceived severity. How serious do women think that the illness is? How susceptible do they think their child is to getting an illness? Action efficacy, do they think that the behavior works? Access, divine will, do people have a fatalistic attitude about the health of their child, or do they believe that, you know, God sort of decides what happens with the health of their child? Cues for action, can people remember to do things? So we go through a sort of formative research process where we're asking key questions to our target groups, which in this case, again, is mothers of kids under five. So we would say, well, what are the advantages of hand washing? What are the disadvantages? What makes it easier for you to wash your hands? What makes it harder? And we ask these questions between doers, so women who already practice the behavior, and non-doers, women who don't. And what we want to look at is what's the difference. What is enabling the doers to do the behavior, and what's enabling, and what's prohibiting the non-doers for not implementing the behavior, and figuring out what those key determinants are. So this is an example of some of our barrier analysis results, our doer non-doer results from a recent study on hand washing that we did in Kenya. And you can see, for example, under positive consequences, about 80% of doers and 100% of non-doers said that, well, washing hands helps to improve the health of mothers and babies. We got negative consequences, using too much water, self-efficacy, it's hard to wash my hands because soap is expensive. Social norms, my husband approves of me washing my hands, action efficacy, hand washing works. And you can sort of read the rest. So what we're looking at with the barrier analysis survey is to see, well, what are the key differences? Like, what's setting doers and non-doers apart? So for example, positive consequences, if the vast majority, nearly all, everybody we talk about washing hands says that, well, it's good for our health, and we know that that's not really a determinant that's at play there. That's something that everybody knows, and it's obviously not influencing the behavior. But if we look at, for example, self-efficacy, 70% of non-doers said that it was hard for them to wash their hands because it was too expensive to buy soap, and only 33% of doers said that. So we can see that that's a real barrier for non-doers, and it's not a barrier for doers. So maybe we can focus our behavior change strategy around that. Another one where there's a big difference is susceptibility. Doers felt that their child was very much at risk for getting diarrhea, whereas non-doers didn't for whatever reason. So that's another determinant that we could address. And then cues for action. Non-doers at 68% found that it was very difficult for them to remember to wash their hands, whereas for doers, for whatever reason, it wasn't. So again, that we can address that. There's actually like even a spreadsheet that we've developed where we can plug in the number of doers and non-doers that says things and get some statistical tests from it as well. So we've got all sorts of handy ways to do this analysis. So going back to the DBC framework, what we have is that, you know, mothers are washing their hands with soap. And of course, here we have the key determinants that we picked out from our barrier analysis: self-efficacy, susceptibility, and cues for action. And we would use this next column to sort of say what we wanted to do with those determinants. So we want to increase people's ability to pay for soap. We want to increase the perception that children are at risk for diarrhea. And we also want to increase people's ability to wash their hands at critical moments. So whereas our first sort of uninformed activity was around just educating people about the benefits of hand washing, you can see now that these activities might be a little bit more creative than that. Maybe we would get into something around soap making. Maybe we would do something around income generating activities to be able to buy soap. Maybe we would do radio messages about demonstrating how children are at risk for diarrhea. Household songs and reminders, maybe to get people to remember to wash their hands, or having soap in a very visible place right near the latrine. So it forces you to really get into the contextual specificity of things. So that's one of our most popular tools, and it's been implemented. I was trying to figure out if I could find the number of countries and the number of organizations that have implemented these, and I couldn't, but it's significant. Many, many, many core group members and NGOs working in community health are now implementing this process to tailor their behavior change strategies. So just an overview of a couple of the additional tools and approaches that have either been developed or disseminated through the SBC working group, and Jillian will be presenting on a couple of these in more detail in her next presentation. A practical guide to conducting a barrier analysis, so that actually walks you very step-by-step through that process of the DBC framework that I just described of how you go about doing that formative research with the doers and non-doers. Care groups, which are a peer education methodology for mothers that has been implemented widely, and we just came out with a policy paper sort of summarizing the evidence around that. All of these again would be up on CORE's website. This is this is an approach called Partnership Defined Quality, which Save the Children really spearheaded, and CORE's played a very integral role in helping to disseminate that for other organizations. There was a technical advisory meeting a few years ago about how you maximize the effectiveness of the approach. That approach is all around looking at quality from the perspective of many people, both from the clinicians and people working at the health facility, but also from the community, and getting people to sort of agree on a certain standard between the two. So while a clinician might think a quality service would be around following clinical protocols, maybe the community's perspective is wait time and how long they're treated. So it's about sort of coming together with an agreed upon framework for that. There's also technical reference materials that the CORE group contributes to around social and behavior change, so that people are able to sort of be applying evidence-based practices. And we also partner with an organization called Global Learning Partners, who have spearheaded this approach called Dialogue Education. And really, you'll see that a lot of the tools we developed are using those principles. So the areas of focus of the SBC working group for this year and next year, we have a big focus around SBC, social behavior change, and gender. We found that a lot of people were saying to us, everybody always says address gender, but what exactly does that mean? What exactly are we asking people to do? If you think as a behavior change person, you're always trying to define the behavior. And so we're unpacking that quite a bit. We're doing a lot around SBC and disaster risk reduction, resiliency, and emergency response. We talked about, you know, how can you do formative research in a quick way during emergencies, and of course now with the Ebola outbreak, we've been doing a lot to try to get some of these rapid guys off the ground and into the field so that we're moving just beyond the basic facts of Ebola, but into a lot of those contextual issues that we know are so important. And we're also working on a toolkit called Make Me a Change Agent, which is looking at behavior change skills 2.0 sort of for community health workers, skills around empathy, reflective listening, persuasion. How do you just go from, you know, a community health worker giving just key facts when they visit a household, but actually being able to follow up with people, listen to them, do a little bit more of that advanced counseling? So you all are welcome to join us, of course, and the website is there for your reference, coregroup.org.